Welcome to Head Over Feels, the podcast where we discuss matters of the heart while also using our heads, blending emotional awareness with intellectual relationship skills.
We promise raw, real, and sometimes ridiculous advice on love, sex, and relationships.
I'm Megan Sundra.
And I'm Fernando DV. We're here to tag team you with juicy insights, tantalizing tools, and sometimes embarrassing anecdotes in order to help you have the best love life ever.
This week, we're going to be talking about being too much, having your cake and eating it too, an ignored safe word, sneaking porn, and ask versus guess culture.
So in case you have or haven't noticed, we are trying a different format, started with the last episode, just a little more, another question, and focusing on one spotlight topic. Or combined section. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're also trying to sound more human and have, you know, natural flow with things. And
let us know if it's working.
Yeah. Because I think I was looking back, like, you know, we just went right to the questions or right to the thing.
Yeah. Crash landing.
Yeah. Or we're just like, here you go. Thank you. Transaction done. Right. Here it comes to the next thing.
We're about a more holistic experience here at How to Over Feels.
For. Yeah. So on that note, I wanted to delve in with Meg. The first question goes over about being too much. Mm. God damn. I feel like we can all relate to some level of either experiencing it ourselves or telling someone that. Mm. And have you ever had anyone tell you that you are, in big quotes, too much?
Yes, on multiple occasions. I'm a very expressive person, in case somehow you all haven't noticed. And I'm probably a bit much in comparison to certain people. I've definitely had partners be like, I've been touching them just so much, and they've taken my hand off of them and like placed it back onto my lap, like literally removed my hand from them. And it made me so self-conscious, and it made me guess all the time of like, am I being too much now? How about now? Is this the right amount of affection? How about this? Did I text too many times? Like, it just was like a brain worm, you know?
And they never said what it was?
Or? I mean, some people have just been like, you touch too much, you know, or like, I don't want all that. And I'm like, but I'm expressing my love. Like this, I'm that enthused, you know? I don't know. It's such a tough space to navigate. I don't think I've ever like solved it with someone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever experience it now in like your adult life ever?
Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I'm speaking from like all my history of romantic relationships mm-hmm. since I was like 19 or so. And yeah, it's come up a few times. Yeah. Sorry, not sorry. I'm a lot, and I'm going to be a lot, and it's okay. How about you? Have you had this happen to you?
I feel like I have, and I can't remember how. I think it's like there's too much communication or too, same thing, too much affection. Mm-hmm. And that is so strange to be told that. You're like, well, by itself, it isn't inherently wrong.
Right.
But if you don't tell me what is too much, what's the barometer? Is like touching your shoulder three times too much, but the two is okay?
Right. You know, it tends to change frequently.
Right.
Moving the goalposts.
Yeah. And I think the hard part is you start getting in your head about yourself.
Yes.
And this is, and it's a bit of an assumption too. It's like, you're doing it too much. Okay, motherfucker, tell me what is enough.
Yeah, like, yeah.
You know, well, it's like the person who's standing over is like, more wine, or they're grinding the cheese for your salad, you know, right? One of those fancy places. I think I've only been like one restaurant in my life that did that.
Right.
And then you're just like, more.
Yeah, just don't stop.
And they keep going.
More Parmesan.
But then, you know, they don't stop until you tell them. And I think it does a disservice when you tell someone such a vague, this is too much.
Yeah. Like their barometer is the one that's right. You know, like they're the measuring stick by which you have to adhere.
Yeah. And that's not workable. No. You have to be specific.
Right.
You can tell like, hey, like maybe it's more about mood than it is about the amount of touches. Maybe today 10 shoulder taps was too much.
Yeah. Something about timing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It could be a number of things. And that's, we're going to delve into the first question because it makes us feel like there's something wrong with us.
Right.
But it's more about the other person. Mm-hmm. And so we want to kind of reclaim that and start getting a broader perspective, so that way you can have this other view of it instead of this thing where it's like, what is it about me? And and also get the other person to speak more directly. And that's where it kind of ties into the ask versus guess, you know. They're essentially guessing, you're like, okay, I need you to guess how much touch is okay.
Yeah.
Versus telling you, like, you know, not as very direct.
Right.
We'll delve into that here in a little bit. So in any case,
we'd love to hear from you guys if this is something you've experienced. Are you usually the one getting told you're too much, or do you find yourself in the position telling your partner that they're too much too often? Mm. Or have you experienced an equal amount of each? I'm very curious about that.
Yeah. Send those questions.
Yeah.
Or your updates.
Yeah.
I've been getting some, so thank you for those.
Yeah.
All right. The first question is from Abigail. Hey, Fernando and Meg. I could use your opinion about my affectionate nature and what to do about it. I'm 21, and so is my boyfriend, and we've been together for a year and a half. I consider myself a pretty sexual person, and when we started dating, my boyfriend and I had a lot of sex, and we're very physically affectionate in general. There doesn't seem to be much a difference at first, but after a couple months, I started noticing that I was usually the one to initiate affection, whether it was sexual or not, and he was usually the one to end it. Like, I'd reach over and stroke his arm, face, whatever, or nuzzle his neck, or rub his shoulders, but after a few minutes, he'd start looking annoyed or move my hand off of him or make some excuse to get up or move away from me. It's fine that he might not always be in the mood for affection, but this became a pattern that I started interpreting as meaning he wasn't as into me or something like that. It's true I have a lot of energy, and I'm really excited about him, but I don't understand why he wouldn't want that for me. Don't most guys want their girlfriends to be more affectionate and sexual? Mm. Who doesn't want a partner that's in love with them? Yes. Mm. Anyways, the first few times I brought this up gently, he made excuses like, I'm just tired tonight, or my mind is focused on all the projects I have due this week. I didn't feel like I could argue any of those reasons. But when it happened again recently, I was so angry, I just blurted it out and confronted him. I asked, why don't you just want me to touch you? You've been so distant lately, and you keep pushing away. I thought you wanted me. I may have said a few other things in my frustration. He got really defensive and upset and said, honestly, you're kind of too much. You really need to chill out sometimes. The constant texting and being all over me at every spare moment is kind of annoying sometimes. You're definitely more needy than my exes.
Oh. Ugh.
Maybe you need to get more hobbies or work on your self-esteem issues, because you come across as desperate, and it's honestly a turnoff.
Gaslighting.
Yeah. And projection.
Yeah, yeah.
I told him this is how I want to show my love and attraction to him, but he didn't seem to be listening much and kept looking away. I was so hurt and left his apartment in tears. I totally disagree with the way he put that. I have plenty of hobbies, and I don't think I'm more insecure or clingy than most of the other girls I know. I just don't get it. How can I possibly stop being, in quotes, too much?
Oh my God, this breaks my heart. Abigail, I'm so sorry this is happening to you. I hope that we can validate you in saying that you have the right to fully express yourself in a relationship, and you are not too much. Believing that his preferences are a judgment on your character or your expression style will erode your confidence. It will decrease the beauty of the love you're trying to share, and it may affect your sense of worthiness. I don't think it's fair of him to characterize your actions as a character flaw like that.
Yeah.
Because for him, perhaps you are too much, but for someone else, you might be just the right amount. Or maybe not even enough. Other people may want more affection than what you're giving him. You never know. There's such a spectrum of this out there. And I think you will be happiest if you find someone who is closer to your point on the spectrum. That way you can give and receive at levels you're both happy and satisfied with. Because I totally feel the same way. If I'm being more affectionate than my partner, I cannot help, even at age 35, but cannot help but interpret their lack of interest in touching me or receiving touch from me as a lack of emotional interest in me or sexual interest in me, both of which are very devastating.
Yeah. There's a saying around the too much. It's like, first off, you are not too much, Abigail. Mm-hmm. So whenever someone says is too much, the response can be for who?
Mm-hmm.
And so I hear that, you know, this is really hurtful. And so I want to look into this a bit. So I want to consider like the broader perspective, you know, he's telling you all these things kind of in one foray of just information. And it sounds like he hasn't really communicated it. And that's a bit problematic. Mm-hmm. Like, when was the last time he told you that he felt the texting was too much, or there was that he wasn't okay with her, whatever the case is. All these things, it almost felt like it was just at once he just dumped a bunch of things.
Yeah, he's like been bottling it up.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And so what else is he not speaking to? So be fucking direct, dude. And, you know, if he doesn't feel like he wants to communicate as much, or if there's other boundaries, he needs to speak to that. He can't just like go through the relationship and then at some breaking point just say, hey, you're actually kind of annoying and you're kind of this and that. And it's like, that's the last thing you want to hear when you're getting no cues or validation or mm-hmm. any confirmation. And then it's like out of nowhere, you're driving on the highway and then all of a sudden all four of your tires blow up. You're like, where was the, you know, like, where was the heads up on that?
Right.
Yeah. Like at least blow up one tire so I can at least drive to the side of the road, not like all four where I'm like in a crisis. So, mm-hmm. And that's what this sounds like. It's, he's not speaking and communicating his needs or what he is or isn't comfortable with, and then it just comes out at once. That's not workable in a relationship. If there are things that aren't working, you address them as they go along.
Right. And he could have phrased that in such a more compassionate way. Yes. Like if he listened to our episode about nonviolent communication, mm-hmm. he could learn how to phrase these accusations at you in the form of I statements. Like, I feel physically overwhelmed when you touch me a lot like that. Can you do X, Y, and Z instead? That just is a way for him to speak about his own experience with your actions being neutral. Like, he's not judging your actions. He's just telling the result of those actions on him and then making a clear request for how to tweak it so that you both can be happy in the future. But it sounds like this is not the level of emotional intelligence he's at right now.
He is 21. Like,
that's true. You guys are young. Oh
yeah. But I agree.
I hear a lot of avoidant attachment stuff in his things that he said. Mm-hmm. Like, I think he's maybe trying to turn the blame on you for his own unwillingness to give or accept love mm-hmm. or to be vulnerable. Like, that level of display of affection is maybe not in line with his feelings. Like, you could be right that he doesn't want to be touched by you so much because maybe he's not as into you as you are into him. And if you can confirm that, it could suck to hear, certainly, but then you can make an informed decision about whether this is going to be a fulfilling relationship for you to stay in or not. And because that can be a symptom of a disconnect emotionally where you have a physical differential or something in between you. But I also want to point out that this could be something to do with him having certain sensory issues. So you need to ask and find out about that. We can't diagnose that from here, unfortunately. But, you know, there are some people who have, maybe they're neuroatypical. I know people who are like on the autism Asperger's spectrum have very different needs around certain types or amounts of physical stimulation. Mm-hmm. So maybe either he's just not used to it or there's something different about him that makes your touch just very agitating to him or out of the norm. So you may have to negotiate with him a certain type or amount of touch that he's more okay with, if that's the case. It's not, you know, and you only know this by talking to him about it and asking.
Yeah, and just asking maybe why he doesn't feel like he can communicate these things as well. And it also could be a matter of like, maybe he is having a rough time, or he's just like, you know, I just don't want to be touched today, or I'm not really feeling affectionate right now. And that's valid. Like, sometimes I don't want to get touched.
Right. Much,
and so I have to speak up to say, I don't really feel like being hugged a lot or touched, or I'm feeling this way, or I'm just feeling a bit like remote. Or morose, that's the word. Switch the M and the R somehow.
It still works, oddly.
Yeah. So, asking him to be able to speak to like what he's uncomfortable with, because you can't work out problems by silence.
Yeah.
You can work out problems when there's communication, and it's going to be uncomfortable. If it takes him a bit to speak, that's fine. But you can't work with him if he's not going to tell you something until it's way past the point. Because if you just get all this information at once, you know, is the damage done, you know, in his eyes to some degree.
But, and, you know, he doesn't owe you affection, and he doesn't owe you a happy receiving of your affection. You know, he has the right to his own boundaries. It's his body. He gets to tell you what he does and doesn't want done to or with his body. But he does owe you transparent and compassionate communication.
Yeah. That's like a minimum. If you're not getting that in relationships, dump their ass.
Yeah, totally.
No, we're not even going to get – you can ask the question, but we're going to go right to that.
Yep.
At least I will.
That's why we love you, Fernando. Yes.
Thank you. Yeah. And you know, another thing I just want to point out as a curiosity is like, what is there a, just to go on the other side of this, you know, is there a need that you want him to fulfill? There's nothing wrong with loving someone, but mm-hmm. if we are looking for to fill something in ourselves because we don't have that love or respect within us, mm. that's going to be problematic, and we're going to repeat that cycle over and over again. So just going from the other perspective of considering, well, if they're, you know, he has his own shit to be responsible for, but then there's also something for you to look at as well. Is there anything in the way that you're interacting in this relationship? Like when he said those things, like is he speaking to any truth or is it all projection? Because sometimes when we speak from that hurt place or from that from a place like that, there may be something for us to listen and get, even if the delivery isn't going to be the most clean or like not, or one that's not going to hurt, you know?
Yeah, that's a really good point.
We want to consider like how we clearly can see his part in it, but how are you participating in this as well? Because mm-hmm. there's maybe stuff for you to look at in yourself to work on. But ultimately changing yourself for another person isn't ever going to end up well.
Absolutely. You know? I don't like that he used the word needy. I think that is a mischaracterization oftentimes, and it's mm. unfair to you. You have the right to your needs.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yep.
Yeah. And if he doesn't want to like hear a need, you can also say you're not willing to like meet the need, mm-hmm. and then you could decide whether you want to be in the relationship or
totally.
not.
Totally. Yeah. Because, you know, he could compromise a little bit, but he should be, like, willing and enthusiastic to compromise. If he's just, like, begrudgingly, like, okay, I guess I'll cuddle with you for, like, 5 more minutes. Like, that sucks to experience. When you know the person's doing affection with you not out of their own, like, authentic will, you know? Yeah. I'd rather not have it at all.
No.
Yeah.
If someone's putting a timer on your cuddle time, that's a big fucking red flag.
Yeah.
That's, like, get the fuck out of there, red flag.
Totally. Well, good luck, Abigail. This is a tough conversation, but be strong about what you want and need. And you deserve somebody who wants and needs compatible things to you.
Yeah. Yeah. If you can't find it here, you'll find it elsewhere.
There are more fish in the mm-hmm. sea. Yeah. Thank you for writing.
Yes. Thanks, Abigail.
All right. Letter number 2. Hi, Megan Fernando. I feel like my coworker is being a shady asshole, and it's really bothering me, but I don't know if it's my place to do anything about it. Here's the situation. I'm a 27-year-old woman with pretty normal and tame dating life, but an open mind. I've worked with quote-unquote Jason for about 3 years now in a pretty stressful workplace, so we've become really close through bonding over the difficulties, happy hours, and a lot of time working together on projects one-on-one. Our rapport quickly grew into a deep friendship. He's around my age, he's gay, and he has a bit more of a cavalier attitude about dating, usually just in the sense that he's casual about it, but nothing too crazy. We talk about our love lives a lot, and I really appreciate having his perspective and support in my life, since this job kind of prevents me from having much free time to invest in other friendships. Over the past couple months, he's been dating 2 guys at the same time. Let's call them A and B. A is a much younger guy with very little dating history, drops off treats at the office, and seems to be crushing on Jason pretty hard. B is around our age, lives a couple hours away, definitely a hopeless romantic, and is madly in love with Jason. At least that's how I interpret it. The thing is, Jason isn't totally transparent with either of them about the other, but doesn't claim to be non-monogamous either. I tried questioning this a little with him, and he brushes off my concern, saying, oh, they wouldn't care. They both know I'm not necessarily looking for a serious relationship right now. I'm glad he told them that at least, but from what he tells me about both their actions, they seem pretty invested. Jason is quite a catch after all, and I imagine they'd be hurt if they found out about the other. It's not like this is in those early stages when you're kind of dating around and it's too early to ask if you're exclusive. It's been a few months, and B is writing love letters and planning trips and all that. I've gotten increasingly uncomfortable because I think he's being unethical, and it's making me see him in a different light. I'm not as stoked about our friendship anymore and stopped going to happy hours together as much. I hate being this judgy, and yeah, it's not my life, but I listen to him talk about the latest developments all the time and have even met A and B at happy hours and other non-work events. I feel bad for them, but there's nothing I can do. Or is there? Am I wrong and this is totally an okay thing to do? Let me know if my moral compass needs recalibrating. Amalia.
Amalia, I think your compass is on point, girl. There's a saying that's made me think of that in some circles that silence is acceptance. Ooh. And it's certainly in contextual, certainly contextual, but I think it definitely applies here. This is, I think it's important for us to say things whenever we notice something's amiss. And it's worth having that conversation to talk about to your friend first to understand their experience and how they relate to this. Mm-hmm.
How much has Jason really thought this through? Like, has this been in his consciousness? Maybe you bringing it up might help him look at it in a different light, potentially.
Yeah, and just sharing, like, what your observations are. Like, hey, like, these... I don't know what unspoken code there is for dating and, you know, just the this gray area assumption that if you're dating, it's an unknown, not a number of people, and you don't talk about it until you're exclusive, in quotes.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that game is about.
There's no hard and fast rules. Yeah. It's hard to tell.
I think it's, from the outside in, mm-hmm. it's confusing. It's, I think, a bit misleading. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like you're shopping for cars. And I guess there's no, this is a bad example, because like if you're going to go car shopping, everyone, and you give every car dealership your number, they're all going to be calling you trying to get you to buy the car.
Sure.
But ultimately, like, there's no harm, no foul if you don't go to any of them. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to people, people are not car dealerships. Mm-hmm. And feelings are going to get hurt. Because imagine if you are really crushing on two different people, and if you identify as monogamous, which isn't super clear here.
Yeah.
Then... what happens if you like both these people, or you're just gaming them until you figure out who you like more?
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen when you're like, okay, I've decided I'm exclusive to this one. What are you going to tell the other person? Hey, I've been dating this other person. It's serious.
Yeah.
First off, they're going to be blindsided, and that's going to be a, you know, rip some trust right there.
Yeah.
Or now that's assuming they, and then I don't know if that connection is going to be open, available going forward.
Yeah. Choosing one might blow up the other for sure.
Exactly.
Or just destroy your potential to even have like a friendship or anything else with them.
Yeah. And then you kind of have to be sneaky about it. You're like, oh, like, oh, I'm just not feeling it or whatever. It's like, instead of being either, if you're straightforward about it at that point, you're going to hurt some feelings. If you're not straightforward about it, you're still hiding. So there's all this like mental, like gymnastics to try to justify these actions. Like, if you could, someone can explain it to me, because I'm having a hard time ethically going through this and being like, this is okay.
Yeah.
Instead of being like, hey, I'm dating two other people right now and I'm just kind of open, but not speaking to that. And we're making this assumption. I think that can be very harmful to other people. And we're just acting like people. It's almost like we're not really caring about how this affects other people. We only care about which one will I eventually get with. That's going to be the one I want to be with. And then we're not shopping for which is the best looking strawberry here.
Yeah.
We're dealing with people, and people have feelings and emotions, and this is going to have repercussions.
Yeah. It sounds like he's trying to have his cake and eat it too. Like,
you should be able to have your cake. I think that statement is fucking dumb.
That's
you bake
true.
Your cake, you should eat it. Why would you bake it and not eat it unless you're gifting it? Sorry.
True. No, I love cake so much. I've been on the biggest carb binge lately, you guys. Someone send help, please. So I think what I mean by that is he wants to date. Seriously, this is a call for help. He wants to be able to date two people without facing the repercussions of having to be real with anybody, of having to actually take anybody's emotions into account and have difficult conversations that may reduce the amount of cake he can eat. So, this doesn't sound very ethical to me either. I think he needs to be more clear, because when he says, oh, they both know that I'm not in a position where I'm looking for a long-term or serious relationship, that doesn't say I'm dating other people actively.
No, it doesn't.
No.
There's nothing in that. Like, if we look at the words, no
None
words.
None of those words overlap. There's no Venn diagram
here. One of
these
pictures doesn't belong with the other.
Right. So having the transparency to, and you know, it takes some courage to come right out and say something that may risk a loss for you, like saying to one partner, hey, just so you know, I am exploring connections with other people right now. I very much value ours. I'm committed to seeing where it goes. Like, tell whatever is your truth. But you do risk losing that person if they were like, whoa, 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 I was expecting a monogamous relationship with you. And if that's not what I'm getting, I'm out. And like, oh, well, it's better to be honest.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I agree, Amalia, that this is, it's not your life. Mm-hmm. And you're also looking out for your friend. You can throw in the looking out for you card.
True.
To step in. Not everyone wants to hear or can handle the truth, but this is, you know, you can also frame it from the perspective of it's affecting how you view them.
Ooh.
And your friendship. You're just like, hey, like, I know you're doing the whatever the fuck you're doing over mm-hmm. there. But I value our friendship, but it's, this is showing me a side of you, and I'm interpreting like that you are not caring about other people. You're like, you're acting unethically.
Yeah, selfishly.
And I'm having a hard time being okay with that because I don't want to be around people who are unethical or who are making decisions that without considering how it would affect someone else negatively.
Yeah, it's gross, you guys.
Yeah.
It's hard to be around the grossness. And I think maybe starting off conversations with some hypothetical questions that are thought-provoking to Jason might help. Mm-hmm. If you say something like, hey, how much does so-and-so know? Like, A, like, how much does A know about your trip with B? Like, did you tell him? Or, like, what do you think B would say if you told him about A? You know, like, these hypothetical things to get him thinking about it. Or how would you feel if you were B and somebody said to you blah, blah, blah about their other relationship? You know, just kind of like getting him to put himself in other people's shoes because maybe that's not something he's doing right now.
Mm-hmm. Would you ever do the hypothetical? Like, hey, hypothetically, if you know where I'm going with this. If you were dating someone and you didn't know that they were exclusive.
Oh, my God.
And then you found out later that they were dating someone else. How would you feel?
Right? Yeah.
Wouldn't you want to know? Mm-hmm. And then just hypothetically speaking, of course.
Yeah, it's not about you. Yeah, this no. Totally made up question.
Just like shooting the shit here. That's probably what I do. Like, okay, this is really about you, in case you didn't figure that one out. And I kind of have a problem with it. And I'll own that. And so you have to take ownership for what's yours.
Nice.
And that not project that, you know, it's not your job to say, you're fucking up, change this. Mm-hmm. But you can speak from, I value our friendship, and this is what I'm wanting in friendship, and this is starting to cross a really gray line of, like, you know, being an ethical or mindful person, and I'm having a hard time trying to work through this. So, like, I kind of want to know where you're at with it, and how do you even relate to it? Like, do you feel like this is, you know, how would you feel being in the same situation?
Yeah, it's going to be difficult to talk about these things, but I think it'll alleviate the stress and cognitive dissonance you're feeling in your mind and maybe even repair this friendship and maybe save A and B from catastrophe. Who knows? You could be like doing Jason a favor by helping him like look at this in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely. Another thing you can also do is set boundaries with your friend.
Yeah, that's true.
Because if there's a certain point, you're like, look, I can't really... I'm unwilling to have conversations around your sexual forays and manipulating people, or however you want to phrase it. Like, it's kind of hitting this really hard spot for me. So I want to be responsible for my stuff, but I think in the meantime, I really don't want to hear about those relationships because I'm noticing how it affects how I'm like seeing and experiencing you.
Yeah.
And I want to have our friendship be as quickly clean as possible.
Yep. And you work with this guy. Like, you have to see him a lot. And it sounds like you guys have had a really close friendship. I think it's worth bringing it onto the table.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So we wish you the best, Amalia. This is not an easy one, but you can step in. You're a friend looking out for someone else.
Yeah, good luck, Amalia.
If you love our wisdom and insights from the podcast, imagine how valuable it would be to get private one-on-one coaching with us. We'd love to give you a personalized perspective and support around any kind of relationship struggle that you're experiencing. To get more info and apply, go to headoverheelspod.com/coaching. Our next question comes from Derek. My boyfriend and I have been together for about a year and a half, and both of us are into BDSM, which gets pulled into the bedroom for every once in a while. We've been exploring a lot of new things lately in that realm, and to say the least, it's been very exciting.
Ooh.
I'm a bit of a sub and enjoy getting tied up. Hey, I do too. This past weekend, we were playing, and I was tied up, and during our playtime, I started to feel very uncomfortable and was ready to get out and be done with the scene. I said or agreed upon safe word several times, and my boyfriend didn't stop. I started yelling the word and was even crying as I was having a panic attack and feeling so confused and helpless as to why he wasn't stopping. Just to be clear, we don't have any kinks around this sort of thing, and every other time we've played and I've used the safe word, we stopped immediately. We haven't talked about it. I left in a hurry and just went home and tried to collect myself. Like, how could this have happened?
Whoa.
What went wrong? I feel violated, hurt, and confused. I've never had this with my boyfriend before, and I don't feel safe right now, especially with him. What should I do? I can't tell if I want to work it out or just end the relationship, because that was fucking miserable. Oh, Derek.
Wow, that is awful, Derek. I'm so sorry that happened to you. Yeah,
that sounds so terrifying. And a major breach of trust.
Yeah, no one should ever have to endure that. It sounds really shocking, too, especially considering the context of your relationship thus far.
Yeah.
You said it's been a year and a half that you've been together and that you've done some BDSM before, and this is the first time this has happened. Has there been anything leading up to this that would indicate your partner would do something like this? Has he been malicious in some other way? I'm really curious. Have you guys had a lot of education or practice or training in BDSM etiquette? Does your partner not respect, like, safe word? Like, where? Yeah. I'm just so curious about the context for this. Yeah. It seems so out of nowhere.
I think this is, I'm going to come out and say it. Like, this is textbook definition of rape.
Yep.
Like, there's no, we don't need to sugarcoat it. Mm-hmm. This is what it is. And I think when you feel safe or in a way that feels safe to you, I think speaking to or writing to or communicating to your partner your experience so that they can understand, like, you know, and obviously, like, this is something that you have to figure out what way you're going to feel the safest in delivering this, because if you're going to share experience that might be re-traumatizing, especially how, you know, this is a major breach of trust. Like, you've been in an intimate relationship with this person, and all of a sudden, out of nowhere, or seemingly out of nowhere, there is they breach that trust, and you were violated.
Yeah.
And so, you know, there's a part of me that would want to know, like, hey, like, I need you to know that this is what happened. Like, just facts. Like, I said the safe word multiple times. It was not listened to. You did this without my consent. This is what you constitute as rape.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel really uncomfortable and unsafe with you right now.
Yeah.
I want to understand what happened and why that happened, because this really shook me. And if we're going to continue going forward, there needs to be a lot of fucking trust built up, because this is not something that I'm willing to deal with or just be okay with on any level. And I need to know that I'm safe going forward.
Yes. That's a great way to put it. Because that's a huge rift in the foundation of your relationship right there.
Yeah.
And it will take a lot of work and healing to fix that in the foundation. And you have to find out if he's willing to do that. And if you're willing to do that, if you don't feel safe and you don't like how this feels, and if you don't think that it was some kind of accident or misunderstanding, you can get the fuck out and not look back. And that's okay. And it sucks. Like, you're going to have to mourn a relationship, what you thought you had, and, you know, find a safer support network and space in your life.
Yes.
But once you talk to your partner, even if you send an email, write a letter, whatever method feels safest for you, see what he says, and hopefully he will take accountability and be apologetic and have remorse and hopefully shock and embarrassment about what he did. But we can't tell from here what the situation was going on in his head.
Yeah. Yeah. And in addition to all that from his side, we also want to see change.
Yeah.
Because, you know, this is not something that I'm sorry is going to, like, just erase in the vacuum of that.
Best apology is change behavior.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, I think it would be good to write out, like, what needs do you have around this, and then also, do you want to work through this together?
Right.
So like couples counseling, you know, there are like sexual assault lines and support groups that would be great resources.
Mm-hmm.
Because this, you two can come back from this. And I think it's going to be a radical understanding from his side to understand like what the impact of his actions was.
Yeah.
And for him to also work to like rebuild that trust. Mm-hmm. And so that might look like no physical intimacy for a while.
Right.
That might look very different in the relationship if you two want to continue it. But if he's sincere and remorseful in, you know, in his lack of like decision making.
Right.
Then if we see that he's like taking the steps like to go through therapists or go through support groups and to like to really understand, you know, his actions and like do taking steps towards repairing that, that shows signs of maturity and accountability.
Yeah.
And I think that's huge in any relationship. And like Meg said, you can also, if you're like, this is kind of a hard no and I'm willing to leave it, there is no one, and we certainly will not, and no one else will judge you for that.
Right.
But if this is something you want to work with within the relationship and continue forward, it will take work, and your partner will need to know like the relationship could look different for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You don't just go Godzilla through a city and expect people to welcome you with open arms. You
right.
know, you gotta show you're not gonna whip your tail around and, you know, destroy skyscrapers again.
Totally. I think in addition to therapy, counseling, other, you know, self inner work sort of things that need to be done here, you could look at BDSM educational resources about how to understand proper etiquette, safe word usage, reading your partner's signals, negotiating a scene ahead of time, things like that. And then you can work your way up very slowly back into any other kind of power dynamics or release of trust to someone else, things like that. It'll take quite a while to get back to a place where you're both comfortable and rebuild that trust. But man, safe words are sacred. They must be respected all the time.
Yeah.
At the first utterance.
Yeah, and that's why there's the safe word. If you don't have that, you have nothing else.
Absolutely.
Especially in the context of BDSM, because there can be some activities you do that can be either life-threatening or can be trauma, you know, trauma-inducing.
Right.
And in a safe context, they can be very liberating and cathartic and beautiful and just freeing in so many ways.
Yeah.
But when you take that safeness away, it's no different than a real life, you know, like assault of any sort.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Good luck with this, Derek. It sounds really difficult. We hope that you can heal from this with or without this partner, whatever you choose.
Yeah. Our hearts are with you. Best of luck.
Yeah. All right. Letter number 4. Head over feels. I need help. Well, you've come to the right place.
We got you.
I have a boyfriend. We'll call him Ty. Of over 4 years that is addicted to porn. I noticed that the times that we have sex have diminished greatly. At first, I thought it was due to work and stress, but that isn't it. And it's gotten to the point where Ty is sneaking around with it. There are days where I want to be physical with him and he tells me he's tired. Then that night, he sneaks off to the other room, masturbates, then comes back to bed or spends over 30 minutes in the bathroom and not taking a shower. I've even been in the other room reading, and he will do it without realizing I can hear it. It feels like he is choosing porn over me, and that really hurts when he tells me one thing and seemingly acts a different way. I have tried to bring it up, and he gets very defensive and angry and ends the conversation, not wanting to talk about it. I love him, but I'm not feeling like this can continue like this. I get more attention from people while out and about than I do when I'm with him at any time. Do you think this is fixable or should I move on, Joe?
Oh, man.
I'm so sorry, Joe. That's very disheartening.
Yeah. No one should have to deal with being in a relationship where you feel like your partner is choosing something like porn or anything else over them.
Like, this is clearly not a libido issue. He does want to masturbate, but he does not want to scratch his horny itch with you for some reason. And we can't tell what that is from your letter. And I'm really frustrated that he's not willing to talk with you about it and just brushes this off. That's a bad sign.
Yeah. And I think with the behavior as it is, it sounds like It sounds like addiction. It sounds like there's a legitimate addiction.
Yeah.
And I say that because addiction can be typified with the sneakiness.
Yes.
With saying one thing, doing another. Mm-hmm. Porn addiction is a real thing. People do deal with it. And there are lots of support groups around that can help and help people work through that. Mm-hmm. And it sounds like he is at the point where this is a bit consuming. You know, it's no longer, now he's like looking for this unrealistic thing or this thing that's so detached from reality.
Yeah.
And that's his only source of like physical intimacy.
Another sign that this is a problem is that it's negatively impacting your relationship.
Yeah.
And that he's unwilling to talk about it. So I would bring it up in as much of a compassionate way as you can, kind of like validating his feelings, like, hey, it's okay that you watch porn. I support you. I want you to get your needs met sexually. But I have needs too, and I'm feeling sad and kind of abandoned that you don't seem interested in helping me meet my needs in any way. And after 4 years together, I'm really wondering what's going on with you emotionally that you don't want to have sex with me. So asking him, trying to get his experience, is going to help you guys get to the root of this.
Yeah.
But if he continues to refuse, no matter what angle you take, you may eventually have to put down your foot and give an ultimatum and say like, hey, having a sexual component to a relationship is extremely important to me. And I am devastated that you and I don't have that component anymore. And I've tried everything I can think of to make it work with you and get you to be more honest about why you don't want to have sex with me, why you're hiding porn the way you are, et cetera, and you won't engage with me. Therefore, I feel like I'm being forced to the point where I have to break up in order to have the kind of relationship I want elsewhere.
Yeah. Or it's maybe it's a choice.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you're choosing, if this is important to you to choose, then I'm choosing to not be in the relationship anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
And in some ways, it sounds like he's already decided that for you.
Yeah. Going back to what you were saying, Meg, about being like calm about the conversation, I think that's going to be a good way to kind of bring, you know, kind of call him in, like, hey, like, I like to talk about this. And you don't want to come from a place of shaming or wrongdoing,
accusing.
You just say, like, I just want to ask your experience, like, how does he relate to it? Maybe he is ashamed about it. Mm-hmm. Maybe there's a whole lot of shame and it's hard for him to admit it, and he feels like he's failing you. That's also very possible. And so it's, addiction shame is a real thing.
True.
And people don't want to talk about it. What's his name? There's a gentleman, he used to do the deodorant commercials. I can't think of his name, but he did a bunch of videos where he stepped up on, admitted to all his millions of fans that he has a porn addiction.
Wow.
And like openly talked about how that almost destroyed his marriage, and how it was consuming him. He'd be sleeping at work, and just like, it was so consuming to him.
Wow.
And it almost cost him his marriage of like, you know, and he had like two kids. And it was just so beautiful for him to speak like, yeah, like this is, when you don't talk about it, it gets bigger.
Yeah. Good and, for him.
Yeah. And it was, and you don't have many really strong male models. We don't have a lot of positive models in general.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's just like so confident in like speaking like, this is my vulnerability. I'm being real with you.
Yeah.
You don't really see that from a lot of celebrities. And so for him to be like, I've got nothing to fucking hide. Yeah. He's like, dude, fuck yeah. That, I've never had role models. And that dude, and I can't remember his name, but yeah, the way that he presented that was just like so raw. And I think more people would benefit from, instead of hiding from the thing, like talk about, yeah, I have this thing. Let's stop stigmatizing this thing. And let's like bring it into light so we can actually do something about it. Our demons get bigger when we stop addressing them, ignoring them.
Ooh, I like that one. Yeah. That's so true. It sounds like your boyfriend is probably hiding in a world of his own internal secrecy and difficulty, and there's maybe a lot of mud to wade through in there. And speaking directly about it together will help create a future that will make both of you happy. And if he doesn't want to collaborate on that vision, then he's not the right collaborator for you. If he is okay with just abandoning the connection you guys have physically as it is right now, then it sounds like he's okay with you breaking up, but he wants you to do it. Like, maybe he just doesn't want to deal with this, doesn't want confrontation, wants to just let things decay to the point where you can't stand it anymore, and you're the one who has to, you know, open the door and leave. And then he can just be like, oh no. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have to do it himself and address a difficult thing. Like, perhaps he's not attracted to you anymore. His tastes have changed or something else. Like, he may have to admit to himself that he has an addiction problem. So by not addressing it, he gets to like continue to live in his toxic la la land, but it's attractive to him because he has control over it.
Yes.
And that's why he wants to stay in it, because he's getting something out of it, even though it's not healthy.
Yeah. Ah, well said. I remembered his name's Terry Crews.
Excellent.
Yes. If you have a chance, I think there's something you can look on YouTube, and it's something like, I'm not coming out of the closet, but like, what's hiding in my closet or something. And it's a series. And there's even one where he brings his wife in to talk about it. And I think that the ability for one to speak to that, to what they're hiding, you, when you have nothing to hide, what's there to hurt you with?
Absolutely. It's very empowering.
Yeah. And so, yeah, in this situation, like for Ty, we can only hope that he's willing to have the conversation with you. And, you know, if he's willing to come forward, you can offer whatever support, you know, as a person you've been with for several years, I'm sure you don't want to end the relationship.
Yeah.
And so if he's willing to like work with, you know, support groups or something, like maybe you can offer some guidance in that way, then he's got to do the work. You know, he's the one who has to go show up for meetings or therapy, whatever it is. And, you know, as just make sure that whenever you're talking about him, like to avoid any shaming or blaming language.
Right.
Talk about yourself, I statements, and that will help bring him, make him feel safer to come forward. Mm-hmm. These things are not easy to, for people who maybe struggle with like really vulnerable things. And, you know, a lot of guys, we tend to have that struggle. Being able to know that it's safe for us to come out will be the first step to kind of like helping him come in. Like, okay, you can ease him in, and then he can be really open about what's really there.
Yeah. Being compassionate, being supportive in his journey or his process, and providing like a soft landing pad for him to come on out and be vulnerable about this stuff and have those difficult conversations is all you can do in regards to his inner work and his journey. What you can do in terms of your own boundaries and standards is decide what they are and stick to them. And you may have to make some tough decisions, but know that it's within your right to do so. And we want to help you feel empowered to get your needs met and find someone who's willing to be open, honest, transparent, and direct with you in their communication.
Mm-hmm. Well said.
So our spotlight and toolbox today will be covering ask culture versus guest culture. And when I first read about this, it totally blew my mind.
Tell us more, Meg.
Yeah. So there's a woman named Andrea Dondari, I believe is how it's pronounced. And I think she goes by Tangerine on the forum where she first posted this. So we tracked down a little bit of information and found her description about two different frameworks of viewing the world in terms of asking for what you want and responding with a yes or no to someone else's request. And it turns out her analysis was like, people fall into one of two categories, and it mainly depends on what culture you were raised in, how you were, how, like, where did you grow up, you know, not geographically necessarily, although I have my theories on that. Yeah. We'll get to that. But basically, your behaviors around asking for what you want will differ whether you're part of ask culture or guest culture. So let's talk about what each of those, what she means by each of those categories. So ask culture is when you were raised believing that you can ask for anything and that it's okay to say no to someone else's request. And it's also okay to hear a no. If you ask for what you want and someone says, no, I can't do that for you, then it's like, okay. And everybody's cool about it. And everyone's very direct and straightforward. And so when you say or hear a no, it doesn't tarnish your reputation as having good etiquette. And it doesn't degrade the relationship in any way. Everybody's like still cool with each other, just said no, on to the next thing. Guest culture, on the other hand, is like when you avoid putting a request into words until you're pretty sure the answer will be yes. So you're trying to avoid putting the other person in a position where they'd have to say no. So this requires putting out feelers, a lot of subtlety, a lot of indirect communication. And this varies just within the bubble of the culture you grew up in. There's a lot of signals, a lot of, you know, reading signs with people not saying directly what they want or what their answer to what you want would be. I personally come from guest culture, but I have made a lot of changes in my own inner work and then also changed the types of people I hang out with. And I think most people in my life now are part of ask culture. It's a really different existence and it takes a lot of adjustment. And when I'm around people who are still in guest culture, I may know how to behave around them, but it feels more taxing personally. I'm just like, this is exhausting. I don't want to do this whole dance with you. I'm just going to come right out and say it, you know?
I've never thought about, that the emotional taxation it could have on someone. Would you say that ask is better? Is it as cut and dry as that?
It's my personal preference. And therefore, you all should agree with me.
I agree with you.
My preference is what's right. I think there's a little bit of geographic and cultural influences, and I would love for a sociologist to do some legit research on this, because right now I only have the theory that guest culture is very much a trademark of the Midwest.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. And I have the feeling that certain traditional ethnicities or religions may have more guests to them. I don't have enough data to make statements on that. Maybe just stereotypes about, you know, cultures who tend to be very subtle and indirect, and politeness is heavily valued. Growing up in a Christian bubble, that was very much part of it as well.
Yeah. It's like, in the guest cultures, it's definitely, it feels like there's a lot of passive aggressiveness, like you were mentioning.
Yeah.
A lot of, like, you hear the expectations, you're saving face in almost all of your interactions.
That's a great way to put it.
And it's more about looking good than to being clear about what you want or what you need. And you saying it's the Midwest, like, dude, that's growing up and all the people that's around. And I think even within my family too, there's probably some of that where instead of directness, there's like mixes of some directness here and there, but it was kind of like, we kind of want you to assume, I want you to have a good idea of what I want.
Right.
Without me speaking
to you. There's a lot of mind reading expected.
You know how I feel about mind reading.
Oh my God. It's exhausting.
Yeah.
Because then you're playing this guessing game constantly and you want to like be in good standing with someone, but you're not sure what is required of you to maintain that good standing. Like, what kind of communication do I need to do to help you feel more comfortable? There's a lot of anticipating the needs of other people, which I think people-pleasing types can get sucked into, and it can be especially detrimental to them.
Yeah, people-pleaser right here.
I
think that's the other thing. Is like you're doing all this work to make sure that the other person feels okay. And even just hearing that, I don't hear much consideration for yourself. It's more about like, what is it so the person need, or how am I overstepping my own boundaries and needs so that I can make sure that I get an okay and acceptance from this other person or this group, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I like the statement that says, guest culture depends on a tight net of shared expectations. Key skill is putting out delicate feelers. If you do this with enough subtlety, you won't even have to make the request directly. You'll get an offer. Yeah, it takes a lot of skill and delicacy to discern whether or not you should even accept an offer as well. So there's like layers to this of complication. You've got to be constantly playing chess a few moves ahead in your own mind. Yeah. It's like, well, that person offered, but do they mean it? Am I supposed to reject it? Like, oh my God.
Yeah. What does it mean if I do reject it?
Right.
What do they think of me? And I think this all got stirred up, I think it was an online forum or something, where someone asked, like, one of this couple's like distant friend was asking if they could stay.
Yeah.
And I think the question was around, is it rude of that person to ask to stay with them?
Yeah. Like, oh, hey, I'm coming to your city. Can I crash at your place?
Yeah.
They were kind of interpreting that was rude of their friend to just
to be so direct.
Be asking and direct. Yeah. Yeah, totally.
And then, but the reality is that, you know, so depending on which side, and as you can see, like, whenever you have ask and guessing guess people come together, it can be pretty messy because they're kind of not seeing eye to eye.
Yeah.
And in this case, when starting from that example, from what I hear, that's like, oh, I'm glad they asked me and I have the power to say no. And I know I was a person who I had that before, where I had friends who were like, oh, you live in Colorado now, let me come and stay with you. And I think I would reluctantly let them stay with me, and I'd be so pissed at myself and frustrated at them for even asking. I felt like I couldn't say no, but that's on me.
Oh yeah, you betrayed your boundaries there.
And then eventually I was like, no. Eventually, once I was like, no, I don't want to host you. Like, there's get a place. Like, I'm down to hang out, but I don't want to host.
Yeah.
And I think, interestingly enough, after I gave multiple no's, they stopped asking me. And so I was like, ah, you're fucking using me. I knew it.
Oh, right. I mean, I love this description of how the two cultures clash. It says that unwelcome requests from people from ask culture seem presumptuous and out of line, and you're likely to feel angry, uncomfortable, and manipulated. But if you're an ask culture person, then guest culture behavior can seem incomprehensible, inconsistent, and rife with passive aggression. I like the idea or the example of, let's say, a kid says to their mom, I need a ride home from school on Friday at 5:00. And the mom says, I have a doctor's appointment at 5 on Friday. Both of those statements are totally flat informational statements. Neither of them is a request or an answer to a request. But if you're in guest culture, you are supposed to infer that the first statement was a question, a request, and that the second statement was the answer to that request.
Whoa.
Right? Neither of them. Right? No, I know. Like, yes, those pieces of information are useful to determine whether or not your mom can give you a ride. But the kid wasn't asking and the mom wasn't answering. Like, if you were to just write those sentences on their own on separate pieces of paper, you would see that they're just standalone factual statements. So when people who are in ask culture are around people in guest culture like this, they're going to be like, okay, so you're just stating something about your doctor's appointment. Like, how is that relevant, you know? And I find myself, when I'm around people like that, since I'm just solidly in ask culture these days, for the most part, as far as I can perceive of myself, because I could be wrong, so call me out if I am. But I like to force people to be direct. Sometimes this requires a little bit of playing dumb or asking them to formulate something more direct. So saying something like, okay, so you've shared some information about your schedule on Saturday. Are you willing to give me a ride? Or like, can you formulate what you just told me in the form of a request? I know I've said that recently as well, because like the information was just, I didn't want to do the labor to infer what that person wanted.
Right.
I wanted them to take accountability for their own needs and just say it directly.
Yes.
Because I'm like covering my own ass at that point.
Yeah.
Because then later in the future, they can't be like, well, I just thought you understood what I meant when I said blah, blah, blah. Or I expected you to understand what the consequences of the information was that I shared with you. And I'm like, nope, I want to hear you say it. I'm going to make you say it.
Yeah.
Because it saves us both confusion and disappointment later on.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I love that you do that. And I can relate to doing something similar with sometimes when someone is asking something. So I'm like, okay, so what are you asking me right now? Or can you, if I'm not sure, it's like, can you phrase that in a different way?
Yeah.
So that I can like understand it. And because sometimes I'm like, I have an idea, but I don't want to fucking assume, you know, like and especially something that's like, what am I signing myself up for?
Yeah, seriously.
So it's like, I don't know if I want to make sure I'm super clear in what this is. And so asking, can you tell me, so what is it you need right now? What is it that you're asking, you know, especially if someone is putting something on you, like it's yours to do. It's like,
right.
No, I'm not, I didn't sign up for free fucking labor. I need to know what I'm signing up for. And whether I'm even going to consent to it or not.
Yeah.
And so by, I think like you're pointing out, by you telling the person or asking them, can you be more direct? You know,
right.
Essentially without saying that, like, how can you give me a way? I want to fully understand this. So I just need more information.
Ooh, yeah.
Can you just tell me? And then I can make make an informed decision,
mm-hmm.
which is probably going to be no. So,
right? Like asking them, what exactly do you need in the situation you're describing to me? Or What sort of expectations or hopes do you have around that situation or whatever it is? Because in my advocacy for ask culture, mm-hmm. I would say that it saves everybody a lot of mental effort, a lot of, you know, space reserved in your brain to be thinking about and hypothesizing, what did they mean by that? What did they want me to do? And you're doing a favor to the person by pushing for more directness and clarity. Mm-hmm. Because who has time for the like mental chess going on in all this? You can still have a loving, respectful relationship in which you help fulfill each other's needs in like a willing, loving, and genuine way, but also with the ability to say no or say yes and not have somebody, you know, respond negatively or with blame or with hidden, invisible expectations. I think it just does everybody a favor and makes life easier, honestly.
Yeah, I totally agree. And for anyone who struggles with saying no to things, a no to someone else is a yes to you.
Ooh.
And I really, that helps me so much.
I love that.
Because I think I have definitely been on the guest culture and wanting to people please. And so being on the other receiving end of that is exhausting. Mm-hmm. And I found myself in a lot of situations which I was like, why the fuck am I here? Why am I doing this? And then I feel resentment towards the other person. But really, I need to like look at myself because I was the one who made the agreements, followed through with it. And I'm just like reluctantly doing this thing for another person.
That builds resentment.
Yeah. And that's not going to go well. Mm-hmm. So being able to say, no, I'm not willing to do this, it doesn't mean anything other than you're declining. I declined the offer. Mm-hmm. When you see that wedding invitation, you're like, nope, declined.
Right.
Then that said nothing about you towards the other person other than I'm choosing no right now. Whether you have a reason or justification, it doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
And I think one of the most helpful tools I've found around this is to give, if you are an ask culture person and you're talking to a guest culture person, you're going to make a request of them. You are putting them in their supposed terrible position of potentially having to say no and like turn you down, and they don't seem nice and polite and giving and whatever the assumptions are. It really helps as a tool to give them an out ahead of time, even before and or after you make the request, saying something like, hey, you can totally say no to this, but I was wondering if you'd be willing to X, Y, and Z. And if they kind of like hesitate, they're like, and you're like, okay, they look uncomfortable. Do they maybe want to say no? Like they're a little constipated. They want to push out a no. But they might need a little help.
Yeah.
So you can give them the laxative of...
She'll squeeze.
Right? So it's like, hey, it's okay. If you say no, you don't even need to tell me a reason. We're totally cool. That can be the biggest relief for people in guest culture, because then they're like, oh, okay, thank God. I'm not like an asshole for saying, no, I don't want you to stay at my house this weekend.
Yeah.
You know, because they have every right to say that. You know, I'm not entitled to staying at their house, but I'd rather them be honest with me. And so I may have to give them a little coaxing, pave the way with rose petals. Like, you can say no, I will be fine. Yeah. And like giving that reminder can help soothe people's anxieties about saying no until they someday can join us in ask culture land as well.
I like that. I like that so much. That's, yeah, it's like defining. You could even go further if you want to, just define the no as well. It's like, hey, like if you, when I hear say no, that just, that's okay. Like you're not rejecting me.
Yeah.
And so maybe that's another part of the conversation is just, I think we hear no as a rejection of a person or something more personal. It's like, no, I'm just saying no. I did not want lettuce on my hamburger or whatever it is.
That's probably why it feels so heavy to people in guest culture, because it's a deep rejection in their assumption.
No, it's like you're not rejecting lettuce. You're just rejecting lettuce on your sandwich.
Totally.
That's a very different thing. You're not rejecting the sandwich as a whole or lettuce as a whole, whatever it is.
I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we hope you guys find this a useful tool to or framework to look through this lens at your life and assess whether you and the people who are close to you are of one or the other, and if you're happy with it or if you'd like to switch to the better one, ask culture.
The dark side.
We love recommending books to you on this podcast, and we want to make it super easy for you to use these incredibly helpful resources in your own love life. That's why we've teamed up with Audible, which has thousands of titles of all genres, which you can listen to while driving, cleaning, cooking, or any other activity. We don't judge. If you sign up through our link, you can get one free audiobook and one free month trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/headoverfeels.
That's it for today's episode. Thanks for tuning in.
To submit your question, go to our website, headoverfeelspod.com.
Also, follow us on Facebook and Instagram at headoverfeelspod.
Please subscribe, give us a 5-star rating, and review in your podcast app of choice.
See you next week.